We sometimes talk about putting the Christ back into Christmas. But someone once suggested we need to put the Herod back into Christmas. Because in the Christmas story, we tend to reduce the role of Herod to the role of a pantomime villain. We boo and hiss, maybe, in our nativity plays. We fear that spending too much time focusing on Herod will spoil the image of Christmas. However, the role that Herod plays in the Christmas story is much more important than we'd like to acknowledge. Because far from spoiling the image of Christmas, the Christmas story actually better represents the reality of life if we include the unpleasant aspects. Because the Christmas story has a dark underbelly, as does all of life. Perhaps we don't want to upset children. We want to shield them. But lots of bad things happen in life. And children know all about them. Just think how scary Grimm's fairy tales are. Think how popular the Goosebumps series of books are for children. To include in the Christmas story Mary, Joseph, and Jesus becoming refugees, to include Herod's slaughter of the firstborn only serves to show that Jesus was born into the real world with real problems. Horrible though these events were, similar things do happen today. For when things like this happen today, we question, where is God? And when they happen, we have no simple answers. But the full scope of the Christmas story shows us that God knows all about them. Because this was the world into which Jesus was born. And this was the world that God came to know and experience through Jesus. The Christmas story is fantastic, but it is not fantasy. It is the good news of God becoming human. That is why it is fantastic. However, if we turn it into fantasy by making it all cozy and nice, we do that by avoiding the uncomfortable bits. And cozy and nice is all right for a short while. It refreshes and relaxes us. But the good news is that God came to us in the midst of the light and the darkness. He gives us strength and hope for the long haul of life. Because God coming to be with us is about light in the midst of darkness. As we think some more about this alternative view of the Christmas story, let us remind ourselves what happened after the wise men departed, as we hear our first reading from Matthew's Gospel. When the Magi had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said. "Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you. For Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized he'd been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity, who were 2 years old or under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because there are no more." Story called The Innkeeper's Wife. We had just lit the lamps when they knocked. Reuben answered the door as he always did after dark. He was a very careful man.
We'd only been married a couple of years and were still struggling to build up the business, but we were becoming known and we had a few regulars staying whenever they were in town. Of course, with the census that week, there were some strange people about and everywhere was full. I wasn't surprised to hear Reuben tell the caller that we had no room left and that he would have to look elsewhere. It served him right, I thought. He shouldn't have left it so late. Then I heard him speak, a rough country voice made harsh by weariness and worry. "Surely you could find us a corner where my wife could rest for a while," he pleaded. Now Reuben was too soft-hearted, especially when there was a pretty girl involved. I knew he'd take pity on them if I didn't intervene. It wasn't that I was hard-hearted, but Ben was only 6 months old and I was exhausted. I couldn't cope with any more visitors. "Look for yourself," I said, flinging the door wide. "Or even sleeping under the tables." A wave of laughter and obscenities almost drowned my words as a group of drunken soldiers rolled out of the door, spooking the stranger's donkey and almost unseating his young wife. It was then I noticed her condition. She should never have had to leave home when she was so near her time. I could understand her husband's anxiety. She was grey with fatigue and almost falling from the saddle. But there was nowhere we could put them, and I didn't want the responsibility if it was a difficult birth. Then I thought of Daniel and Miriam. Their place was in the next street, their stable backed onto ours, and I thought they might be able to fit them in. Reuben gave me a strange look when I suggested it, and then shrugged and gave the man directions. I assumed that was the last I would hear of them. Would that had it been? I didn't sleep well that night. I couldn't get the girl's face out of my mind. What if Daniel and Miriam had turned them away as well? It was far too cold for anyone to sleep out in the fields, especially a woman in her condition. I began to wish I hadn't been so hasty. I hurried round to Miriam's as soon as I could get away the next morning. I wasn't surprised to hear that the baby, a boy, had been born during the night. Miriam was looking as pleased as she were the mother. She took me through to the stable to see him. It didn't seem quite right giving birth in a stable among the animals, but the family seemed quite comfortable, and as Miriam said, there really was no place else. Mind you, I was horrified when I saw a girl had put the baby into a manger, just wrapped in a cloak, with the animals pulling wisps of hay from right around him, although he certainly appeared quite contented. I wasn't so sure about the girl, though. I know we all think our babies are special, but she kept telling everyone that he was the son of God. It was so embarrassing. Then the strangest folk started turning up and demanding to see the baby. First, there was a band of rough-looking fellows up from the hills claiming to be shepherds. They knocked at our door first. "We've come to see the Christ child," said one old chap, leaning heavily on a thumbstick. Reuben threatened to set the dogs on them if they didn't clear off, but they were persistent. "We followed the star as the angel told us to." Reuben seemed to think they'd had too much wine on the way to town, but I did begin to wonder, especially when the next lot arrived. They were very peculiar. Three foreigners, quite well off by the looks of them, with six or seven servants. You could tell by their clothes that they travelled quite a distance. Miriam said she could hardly understand a word they said, their accents were so thick. She said they brought all kinds of expensive presents with them. They stayed 3 nights and she couldn't believe, and I couldn't believe Miriam when she told me how much they'd spent. She and Daniel probably made more in those 3 days than they had in the previous 3 months. Then suddenly, the man disappeared with his wife and baby in the middle of the night. They left money to pay for the lodging, but as Miriam said, it wasn't the point. It wasn't polite to just go like that without saying goodbye or thank you. Of course, we soon found out why. The town had emptied quite quickly as soon as the census was over. Reuben had gone off with the other men to replenish our provisions, and I was alone in the house with Ben when it happened. It was early in the morning, and Ben was asleep in his cradle, and I just lit the fire and was about to get dressed. The sticks were starting to crackle, and I remember hearing a donkey braying. Suddenly, as I was pulling my gown over my head, the door slammed open so violently that the plaster crashed to the floor. Two soldiers with drawn swords burst in, while a third stood in the doorway. Before I could shout out, I was flung against the wall, with a hairy forearm across my throat and the point of a sword piercing my belly through the cloth of my gown. The smell of the soldier's breath made me want to retch. I clawed at his face and tried to scream. He struck me across the temple with the hilt of his sword. When I recovered consciousness, my first reaction was relief that I'd not been raped. Then I heard the screaming and wailing coming from outside. I struggled to my feet and staggered to Ben's cradle. I think I knew before I reached it what I would find. My screams joined those of the other mothers whose children had been murdered that morning. "I don't understand," Reuben said when he'd returned home. "Why kill the children? Why kill the children?" Once you thought about it, it was obvious. One of the soldiers had been shouting something about there not being any king of the Jews now. Maybe those strange visitors had been right, that the baby girl was the son of babies, the girl's baby was the son of God. And it seemed incredible. We all knew the Messiah would come one day, but surely he wouldn't be born in a stable. But Herod must have believed it. Well, why send soldiers to kill all the children? Someone else must have believed it as well and warned his parents, but no one warned us. Ben had no chance to escape. "He was just a baby," Reuben kept saying. There are some who will tell you that they were just acting under orders and had no choice. They weren't there. It was planned down to the last detail. The soldiers were in place before dawn. They broke into every house at the same time. They killed every baby boy and toddler they saw and every adult who tried to stop them and left before people realised what happened. Most people never got over it. There was such sadness and anger in the town that I grew to dread people coming into the inn. All they could talk about was the massacre of the children. Some had lost more than one child and were inconsolable. Some parents whose children had been old enough to escape were made to feel so guilty. Of course, we all knew who'd given them shelter. And what made it even more unfair was that Daniel and Miriam had no children, and they'd made a handsome profit, and we'd paid the price. At first, it was only abuse that was thrown at them, but soon it was stones and worse. Their windows were broken, their animals driven off, obscenities were daubed on their walls, door in blood. Finally, their inn was set on fire. They escaped with what they could carry and fled town. I don't know where they went. I didn't want to know. I was just so relieved that it hadn't been us who'd given that woman shelter. I don't think I could have lived with the guilt. Reuben never recovered from losing Ben. He became irritable and depressed. He would sit all day drinking and staring at the fire, or would disappear for hours at a time. One afternoon, as winter was drawing near again, he went out and didn't return. A neighbour found him the next morning and brought him home, soaking wet and chilled to the bone. By the following day, he had a raging fever, and before the end of the week, he was dead. Eventually, I remarried and made a new life for myself in Jerusalem. Jacob is a good man, and he has cared for me well. I've borne his children, whom I love dearly, and I've tried to put the past behind me. But I've never forgotten Ben and Reuben. continue reading from the Bible, first from Psalm 124. If the Lord had not been on our side, let Israel say. If the Lord had not been on our side when men attacked us, when their anger flared against us, they would have swallowed us alive. The flood would have engulfed us. The torrent would have swept over us. The raging waters would have swept us away. Praise be to the Lord who has not let us be torn by their teeth. We have escaped like a bird out of the fowler's snare. The snare has been broken and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 15 to 17. This is what the Lord says. A voice is heard in Ramah, mourning and great weeping. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because her children are no more. This is what the Lord says. Restrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for your work will be rewarded, declares the Lord. They will return from the land of your enemy. So there will be your future, declares the Lord. Your children will return to their own land. A poem by Malcolm Guite called Refugee. We think of him as safe beneath the steeple, or cozy in a crib beside the font. But he is with a million displaced people on the long road of weariness and want. For even as we sing our final carol, his family is up and on that road, fleeing the wrath of someone else's quarrel, glancing behind and shouldering their load. Whilst Herod rages still from his dark tower, Christ clings to Mary, fingers tightly curled. The lambs are slaughtered by the men of power, and the death squad spread their curse across the world, but every Herod dies and comes alone to stand before the Lamb upon the throne.
What is a refugee? According to the UN Refugee Convention of 1951, a refugee is a person who, owing to a well-founded fear of being persecuted for reasons of race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group, or political opinion, is outside the country of his or her nationality and is unable to or owing to such fear, is unwilling to avail himself or herself of the protection of that country. That's a definition of a refugee. But what would it feel like to be a refugee? Someone who is taken away or forced to leave your home and live somewhere else.
According to the UN, there are around 110 million people who've been forcibly displaced from their homes in the world. 110 million people. 35 million people, million of those are refugees forced to leave their country. 63 million of those are internally displaced, refugees within the same country. And 43 million of those are under 18. At the moment. 52% of refugees come from just three countries, Afghanistan, Syria, and Ukraine.
And these statistics were gathered before the ongoing conflict in Israel and Gaza.
Where being forcibly displaced from your home has come once again to be a reality for those living in the lands that Jesus called home.
Refugees come from countries suffering from war, poverty, and disease, but also from places you wouldn't expect. To be a refugee rips you from all that is familiar, from your home, from your family, from your culture, and you're forced to live somewhere else. And it must be one of the most traumatic experiences that you can endure.
Yet in the first weeks of Jesus' life,
Mary and Joseph experienced this. They fled to Egypt and lived there away from their family for a period of time before they returned home to Nazareth. King Herod, in his murderous paranoia in relation to an unsubstantiated threat to his throne, does something terrible. And his reputation is forged in human history. Later traditions have greatly exaggerated the number of children who were killed in Bethlehem. The size of Bethlehem at the time meant that it was probably around 20 children that were killed, but even one is too many. All because one person was afraid of his position.
Matthew, in response to this infanticide, quotes from Jeremiah chapter 31, and he applies the sorrow of mothers as their children were led off into exile in Babylon to the sorrow experienced by families at this time. Great is the weeping and mourning of Bethlehem. But he's also saying great is the weeping and mourning of God at this. The tranquil image that we see on our Christmas cards is dispelled in this portion of the Christmas story and reminds us that Jesus was born into a time of pain and suffering. Jesus was born into the real world.
The story of Jesus' life speaks to those who know pain and suffering in their lives.
Jesus was not immune to the hard things of life. God came down and shared the brokenness of creation with us. God knows how painful it can be to live in this world. God stands with us in the darkness. And through God standing with us in the darkness, the light of hope can be kindled. Because with God, the darkness has never had the final word. In the person of Jesus, God came personally involved in the pain and the suffering. He experienced the physical and psychological and emotional effects. God has experienced what we experience. That name, Emmanuel, God is with us, tells us that. In Jesus being born as a baby, God roots his relationship with humanity. He came to be with us so that we could come to him, so that we could become.